You're tuning in to Big Guy Small Talk, where we have conversations and not interviews. Although sometimes we do have interviews. Hey, everybody. How we doing? So today's guest is Mickey Dolenz, a state representative from Oklahoma. And I have been trying to find, I mean, this has got to be the 15th time I've recorded this introduction, maybe 20th. I've tried to find a way to list all of Mickey's accomplishments, and I cannot do it in a way that gels well. So I'll just say this. Mickey is amazing, and he's done a ton with his life in a very short amount of time. And if you want to learn more about Mickey Dolenz, check out MickeyDolenz.com. Google Mickey Dolenz. That's MickeyDolenz. And I think it's important that you learn about his past with athletics and then how he transitioned into education, and now he is in government. So check that out. But I want to talk about the issues going on in Oklahoma and the way Mickey Dolenz, as well as other representatives, are attacking these issues and facing these challenges head on. So Oklahoma is the second highest ranking state in prison population and the 49th ranking state in education. And that is not an accident. So Mickey and other representatives are definitely facing a challenge when it comes to appropriating funds correctly, as well as trying to bring in more revenue for education. And so he touches on those things, and we talk about ways that he thinks and bills that he thinks will help the economy of Oklahoma, as well as get in funding so we can pay teachers better in Oklahoma and they don't leave Oklahoma to come to Texas. Even though I love Texas, I also love Oklahoma and I love its people. So I want teachers who love Oklahoma to be able to stay there near their families, and he does too. So I thought it was important to have him on. I'm just going to let you get right into it and enjoy the episode and learn as much as you can about it. And no matter where you live, this pertains to you because we all have state-funded we all have public education in our states, and we definitely need to get more involved with our local governments if we see those problems. So, without further ado, here's Mickey Dolenz, and enjoy the episode.
Hey, what's up, Raphael?
Hey, what's up, man?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right, let me position my phone. I didn't know we were doing this on camera.
Oh, we don't have to. We can just do audio if that's easier. It doesn't matter because it. I mean, the whole thing is going to be audio. It's not. There's no video.
Okay. Well, not be cool to do it like this. I've got to set it up in my truck. Hold on. I'm going to a festival in my district right after this, so I'm just kind of propped up. Okay.
Well, okay. Cool. So how about how much time do you have? So I know what.
I've got 30, 45 minutes, so...
Perfect, man. Cool. So, I think it's best... Like, I'll intro you in the podcast and everything. I'll give you an intro beforehand, so that way you don't have to go through all of your accomplishments, because there's just so many of them.
We can just jump right into what matters.
Yeah, man. You've been really busy with everything going on in Oklahoma, especially with the education stuff. So why don't you just sort of catch me up on what's going on right now?
Okay, and my audio is coming through okay? You can hear me fine?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Well, I was a teacher in my district in 2016 when Governor Fallon cut education not once but twice, and I was one of the teachers, one of 19 laid off at my school, and I decided to run for office. So went door to door. I flipped a Republican district back to Democrat and was elected to help education, to help public safety, to bring my new ideas to help diversify the economy. And the cuts continued, the population continued to increase. And then all of a sudden, you see the walkout happen. And so the past 3 weeks, last week they called it off, but for 2 weeks there were 45,000 teachers at the Capitol fighting for funding. Not just, it wasn't about themselves, it's about their classrooms. So in Oklahoma, 1/5 of our school districts have 4-day school weeks. A lot of our textbooks don't have even, they're not even updated enough to mention 9/11. There are just things that have been cut away and chipped away for so long that it's causing teachers to go to Texas. You know, the average class size in Oklahoma is 31, 32 kids. And if you go to, if you go just 3 hours south of the Red River into Texas, teachers can get an immediate $20,000-$25,000 pay increase. And the cost of living is not that much more in Texas. And so even when, if you were to, you know, compare everything with your income taxes in Oklahoma with no income taxes there, high property taxes, you still take everything and balance it out, you're still looking at least a $15,000 raise when it comes to just moving a little bit south. So that's what we had. And then teachers, they fought. And I know we're not recording right now. I'm just kind of getting you caught up, right?
We are recording.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And so we fought, and teachers got, because of the teacher movement, they got an average of a $6,100 raise, but it was more than just that. They were hoping that it would be recurring. Obviously, they wanted it to, the promise to be funded. And then the GOP majority pulled some shenanigans to where it is fully funded, but only for the first year. And then after that, revenue goes into the general revenue. And they're just hoping that the economy continues to do better and those shortfalls will be made up.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's a lot going on, obviously. So you didn't know we were recording. I plan on including everything you just said. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. Perfect. So then I've been on your Facebook page, and I noticed one thing you did that was really cool is you put cameras in a meeting that you had with teachers. And you do a lot of social media stuff, and I don't see a lot of representatives encouraging like walkouts and encouraging teachers to like put their voice out there. How do you think that's changing the whole environment and the atmosphere? Because I think it's doing, I see a lot of good in it, but I'm not there. So
yeah, I've always I supported from day one the teachers walk out. I've never told them necessarily to walk out. I've always told them that it's the teachers' movement, and I support their First Amendment to stand up for their kids. But the thing about just being as open and transparent as possible is, and it shouldn't be a new thing, but it is. And so anytime I have the chance to broadcast or share something like with the teachers from Being Oklahoma, that I talked to the transportation director who said he was having a hard time getting bus drivers to take kids home at the end of the day because they were making more money. They can make more money at Walmart and McDonald's. And so you'd have a bus driver do a route and then come back to school around 4:30 and then finish up the second route for the other kids. And I felt it was important to share that story along with countless others, other teachers at the Capitol. But there's, you know, I think while transparency is very important, there is this effect that is called the C-SPAN effect. And when legislators, especially on the floor, know they're being recorded or watched by lots of people, the theatrics increase. So in other words, and they studied this in D.C., now there are cameras that you can watch live streaming of all debates and floor activity and whatnot. And when there's a lot of people watching, especially at the federal level, there tends to be a heightened increase of theatrics or, you know, grandstanding. While that can increase partisanship, I think it's important that we use the power of social media and being able to broadcast meetings and conversations in a responsible way, and not use that in a manner to grandstand, but in a way to get more information to our constituents.
Yeah, and then I also like in that same meeting that you were referring to and that I was referring to, they also mentioned that cafeteria workers are working for free.
Yeah, and then they had someone had chimed in and said that the cafeteria workers were still working, but they were working, they were still getting paid.
Okay, so they are getting
paid. Yeah, they were getting paid during. So one of the things that we wanted to address during the walkout was that the kids still had a hot meal. And they were still able to be fed because a lot of kids in Oklahoma rely on school lunches to for their nutrition and breakfast too. So all of those were still provided for children across the state during the walkout.
Yeah, and then I think all this is so important, and I think you bring up really good points, like things that I've seen you talk about and post about, but people complain about crime in Oklahoma and a lot of other problems in Oklahoma, and one thing that mitigates a lot of that, and statistics show it, is like education, right? Like the more educated you create, the more education you give to the youth, the less likelihood that they're, you know, you're going to have people turning to crime, people going to prison.
Yeah, that's very true. There's definitely a correlation of this school-to-prison pipeline. If you don't invest in education, then you're taking away career opportunities. And when you take away career opportunities, you're reducing income, and reduced income leads to crime, and crime leads to more incarceration. That's definitely a correlation. I would also say that Oklahoma's criminal justice laws are archaic, and that's one reason why we have more people than any other state who are incarcerated. It's not because Oklahoma women are more violent than women in Texas or Arkansas. It's just our laws are much more punitive. And when you look at the amount of people that we lock up for $19,000 a year, that's money that could be going into education. So if we were to have vast criminal justice reform and take out the, you know, release the nonviolent, low-level violent offenders, you would be saving hundreds of millions of dollars that you could reinvest in core services like education and healthcare and transportation.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the laws that you're referring to that are a little more outdated?
To take marijuana, for example. You know, that's one deal that's coming up in our June primaries. It's going to be a state question, State Question 788, which would legalize medicinal marijuana. You know, putting people in prison for, possession of marijuana is a good one. People who have mental health issues who are addicted to the more severe drugs like meth or heroin, like let's put them in drug court and get them the rehab that they need to become more productive members of society and not just lock them up and throw away the key where they sit in there and waste taxpayer dollars. I mean, people can be rehabilitated, but it requires investment. And in the long run, that investment is much cheaper than it is to incarcerate people.
Absolutely. And it's more dignifying to the human who's suffering through it. And I think that's a bigger thing that we often forget. We like try to equate people to dollar signs, and we need to like see people as people. I think that's something that reform in marijuana does, and reform in these sort of low level drug possession laws do. But I was actually in Oklahoma about a month ago, and a guy came up to me asking me if I was going to vote pro legalization. I wish I could, man. I wish I lived here. I would completely back that.
Yeah, the medicinal marijuana. Yeah, that'll be very interesting because that'll be on the June primary, so it's going to turn out a lot of voters who haven't voted in a while, which will give campaign managers better data that they can send their candidates to going into November. It's all about voter turnout, and usually people don't turn out unless they have a really strong reason. I think it's worth mentioning, too, all of the past month, the teachers have been fighting for funding, and we passed one of the biggest teacher pay raises in state history, and that required over $500 million in new revenue. There's a group in Oklahoma right now who is dead set on reversing all of those revenue measures, so the teacher's pay raise would dissolve, their taxes would go away, and we'd be back at square one. So going into, that'll be on the November ballot if the group can get enough signatures. That's going to be another one of those deals that turns out a lot of voters in November, just because if you have a family member or you are a teacher or your friend's a teacher, everyone knows a teacher and everyone's appreciative of their teachers in the past. I believe, I have faith that Oklahomans will show up to vote that measure down so we can stay competitive with other states around Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think that's crazy that anyone would try to vote that down, like to help teachers and give them raises, because you also mentioned in another video that there have been no raises for teachers in years, right? Like in decades or like a change to pension plans or anything of that sort, right?
In Oklahoma, we have, in any state, you have a COLA, which is a cost of living adjustment, and retirees in Oklahoma haven't had a cost of living adjustment or a COLA in over 10 years. So while their salaries stay the same, the cost of living increases, and a lot of our retirees are living on $800 a month. So the pension money that they have worked for their entire life is, being hoarded, and they severely need a cost of living adjustment. It's not just a one-time stipend or bonus, but it's recurring throughout the years. And I think it's very important that we figure out a way to get that delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and we've known each other for almost a decade now. And as you know, like, I'm more of a conservative and you're obviously a Democrat, but I don't understand how conservatives don't want to back reform in taxes when the reform literally leads to better outcomes for the good of the population. Like, for instance, you have this COLA adjustment, but then you also discuss like reform for income taxes and a way to mitigate a lot of costs by just raising income taxes by points of a percentage.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. In years past, that was how they won elections, right? You wouldn't think you'd go up to someone and say, hey, I think that if we went from 5% to 5.25%, we could fund core services in Oklahoma. That's exactly what they did, but the opposite of that. Back in 2004, they went from, I think it was even 6% down to 5%. But we were saying, okay, right now, if you were to go to, it's 5%, whether you make $6,800 a year or $68 million, everyone pays 5%. If you were to just, one, raise that to 5.25%, then that means at the end of the year, you wouldn't get your $30 tax cut, but that would be reinvested. But all core services that we rely on, education and rural hospitals and public safety, could be fully funded. That's one solution. You could even go a step further and say, okay, families who make more than $500,000 a year pay 5.5%, and families who make $1 million more a year pay 6%, and everyone else under $500,000 annually pays 5% what they're paying now. That would also bring in stable and recurring revenue that would only affect 3% of Oklahomans while funding all of our core services. So there are many different ways to get to the solution, but it requires compromise. It requires even going there. And thankfully, I'm optimistic that Oklahomans are willing to have those conversations now, whereas in the past, I don't think most Oklahomans would, because we're still a red state, but a lot of people are realizing that the things that we enjoy, like our public safety and our health care and our education, transportation, that requires investment. And so we're on, I think now, because of this teachers movement, Raphael, we've got more people running for office in Oklahoma than ever before. And these conversations that we're having now will happen on doorsteps across Oklahoma. And I really feel like that's going to change the narrative for years to come.
Yeah, and I think that's what's important, because as someone, I mean, like, just speaking personally, as someone who's a conservative, it is hard when you hear, like, we want to raise taxes on the rich, but then you really look at the results of it and you're increasing education, you're lowering crimes, like, just legitimate statistics back that. And so I really do hope that people who are the conservative and do lean more to the right than the left understand that your agendas are the same, right? You want lower crime, you want more kids in schools, you want better transportation, you want the city to, you want the state to represent its people. And the people in Oklahoma are great people, having lived there for a couple years. And so I think that's just one thing that when I hear like just a half point of a percentage increase in income tax would bring in more revenue than a COLA bill would bring, like, I guess I can't fathom that. So I guess what are some things that you're trying to do to sort of work on those things and sort of bring those plans to light? Or what are some things that you're really pushing for right now?
Yeah, two big things. I actually just got my first bill signed into law last week.
Oh, and that's congratulations.
Thank you very much. It's going to expand apprenticeship opportunities and career trades in Oklahoma to help fill this skills gap that we have. And then my other big bill that I've been working the past year on is industrial hemp farming, which is a agricultural commodity that can bring in a significant amount of new and recurring revenue. That passed the House of Representatives 92-0. It passed the House 39-1. And Governor Fallon is expected to sign it tomorrow. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for that. But that industry in the next 5 to 10 years, I believe, is exactly what Oklahoma needs to diversify and maybe invest more in an economy of restoration rather than one of extraction, which is very important still, but we can become more balanced. And we've got right now many farmers across Oklahoma who are just chomping at the bit to get started in this crop. It's something that they can plant in a rotation with their wheat and their soybeans. It requires only a third of the water of the wheat that they're growing, and you can get 3 full harvests of it out of a year. 1 acre of hemp brings in $1,500. Right now, an acre of wheat brings in about $140 an acre. So it's good for farmers. It's good for it's incredibly good for new businesses. It's good for industry investing in processing plants and infrastructure in Oklahoma. And you've got a variety of 1,000 different products that are being made of it. I've already talked to a farmer up in northeast Oklahoma who has a contract with Tyson Chicken. He's going to use the hemp stalks as chicken bedding. There's a farmer down in southwest Oklahoma who is making attic insulation out of a hemp and cardboard mixture, and he's got a patent on that. And so I'm hearing from students across the state who are deciding to study ag business, and they want to get involved with it because, like, they have family who has 50 to 100 acres, and they want to co-op with other small farmers to sell hemp to industry. And so I'm just very excited, and it's not even a law yet, and there's all these things coming together, and they're just very innovative people, and that's exactly what Oklahoma is. It is, we're pioneers, man. You know, we come here and we figure out ways to make new things, and I think that this is going to help us a lot in the long run. And I think it'll take 5 to 10 years before it's a $100 million, $100 billion business, but I think it'll get there. Especially, and I'm happy. I was just reelected for my second term. I didn't draw an opponent for my second term, so I'm in for another 2 years. And hopefully by the time I'm out of here and I can go move on with my life, do something else, I'll have Oklahoma in a better place than when I began.
Yeah, you know, I think it's really cool what you did, because I want to go back to the hemp thing in a little bit, but just to touch on something that I thought, I mean, like, I'm just always impressed by everything you do, but you basically went from teaching and then you saw this problem and funding and the way the government was going, and you were like, I'm going to become part of the solution. And just ran and did it. Like, I don't know a lot of people who just do that, who just, like, are like, okay, I'm going to become a representative, and you just jump right on in. And so I thought that was pretty ridiculous.
You know, back when we used to Rob's place in Alpha Project, you know, if yeah. I hit a new max, you'd have to go in there and do it too, and then I'd have to try to beat that. I think it's just that push and drive that we have. And maybe seeing a challenge and wanting to take it head on, and maybe being a bit naive and doing so helps a lot, because a lot of people knew the challenges and how stressful it would be. They may not be even begin, but, you know, just one day at a time is the way I've always taken everything, and it seemed to serve me pretty well so far.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say, like, I want to go back to hemp, but just, I'm just always impressed, man. So just big congrats on everything you've done, because I'm just always impressed when I look at you, and I tell people about you, and they're just, you know, you're a freak, man, just everything you do. So.
Oh, thanks.
but going back to hemp, I do think like it'll completely, because I use hemp products daily, right? Like hemp soaps, hemp proteins, hemp. I mean, it's a freak plant. Like, what can it do? But I think a lot of people misconstrue hemp versus bud, right? Like, a lot of people think hemp and marijuana, like, are one and the same thing. So could you just kind of explain the difference between the two? And just to clarify for people listening, like, what is hemp? And
yeah, hemp and marijuana are both from the species cannabis, but they're genetically different in that a Great Dane is different from a Chihuahua. Hemp 6 to 9 foot tall. Obviously marijuana doesn't. Hemp can't get you high. It can't test hot for a drug test. It's made for textiles and products and plastics and all sorts of different things, whereas marijuana is used primarily for its medicinal benefit and that head high that you get from THC. In order for hemp to be hemp, it has to contain 0.3% or less THC. And now geneticists have completely extracted 100% of the THC, so there's nothing in it. If one were to try to smoke it, they'd get nothing but a headache. and that's one reason why the Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics has no problem with it. The federal government is really on board with hemp farming. Mitch McConnell from Kentucky actually just introduced a bill that would take it completely off the substance list. I would go back and talk a little bit about the history of it. So Oklahoma is pretty unique in that it was very common back in the late 30s, or I mean even early 30s, but into the early 40s. FDR actually mandated that Oklahoma grow hemp for the war efforts, and we made a lot of ropes and nets and textiles out of that. But unfortunately, throughout the years, it became synonymous with marijuana, and that's when Congress outlawed it back in the 50s. Actually, it was early 40s after the war, they outlawed it. And then in 2014, Congress passed the Farm Act, which would allow states to begin growing hemp under pilot programs that worked in coordination or conjunction with universities with an ag division and also the Oklahoma or the State Department and Ag agency. And so other states have done it. We would be, I think, if Governor Fallon signs a bill tomorrow on Monday, we'd be the 39th now. Kansas just signed theirs last week. And so that would allow us the opportunity to start growing with farmers and having the university study which strains grow best in which regions of the state, and then also collecting data for the economic potential to be able to use as a business plan on behalf of the state to send to industries to have them invest in infrastructure like processing plants. Now, it is pretty exciting because without even having that data, you already have industries from across the country and even Oklahomans who are ready to build processing plants in Oklahoma. And so, I mean, that's going to create thousands of jobs right there. But it's most important, I think, of the pilot program is to study the environmental impact. Hemp is a pretty powerful plant, and it can override different other indigenous plants. So we just want to, one, find out which strains of hemp grow best in which regions of the state, and then, two, ensure that they don't act negatively with any of the other, native plants in Oklahoma. And then the pilot program should last a year and a half, maybe 2 years, and then after that we can remove the university or the research aspect out, and then just have it like any other crop, working with the Department of Ag.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So thanks for like hitting that a little bit, because I do think a lot of people misconstrue it, and I know a lot of kids when they hear hemp think weed and like want to do stupid things with it, and you have to tell them not to.
Yeah. Seed oil has been a pretty big one, too. I don't think I mentioned that. Do you guys have that in Texas?
What?
It's called CBD oil. And CBD,
yeah,
cannabinoids that don't have – so you get all the benefit of what a marijuana plant would give you without any of the head high. So it's legal in Oklahoma, and a lot of people who suffer from arthritis or anxiety or a number of issues find relief with CBD oil. And that's pressed from the hemp seeds, and the oil is extracted. And we have actually a manufacturer right outside my district who manufactures here, but all their crops are in Colorado. And as soon as we pass it, the law, hopefully if it's signed, their crops will move to Oklahoma. And we can, and of course, they'll hire Oklahomans, and that will be money that will eventually go back to state coffers.
Perfect. And then I also want to talk about what seems to be like another big issue, which is the corporate taxes in Oklahoma. So what sort of like what's the lay of the land with those?
Yeah, we give around $1 billion a year away in corporate subsidies. People call them maybe corporate welfare, but that seems to be a pretty bipartisan agreement that we give away a lot of freebies. Probably number one that people have been talking about for the past 2 years is our gross production tax on oil and gas. And since you're in Texas, you're a perfect that's a perfect example to use. In Oklahoma, back in 1994, when fracking became more widespread, horizontal drilling, we offered an incentive to get more drillers here and get them producing. And so we took our gross production tax from 7% down to 1%, and it remained at 1% until, I believe it was 2014, and then it went to 2%. And enough Oklahomans heard about this to where they started looking at other states, like Texas is 8.8%, and you know North Dakota is like 11-12%. And then not only does Texas have an 8-something% GPT, your drills, your rigs also pay an ad valorem tax, property taxes, which ours don't. So there became this big movement to restore gross production tax from 2% back to the historic rate of 7%. And the oil and gas industry obviously is very, very strong in Oklahoma, in our economy, and in the capital. And so the majority party had a tough time moving there. And eventually, though, with enough teachers and concerned parents and people who live here, we went from 4%, and then we said that deal isn't good enough. We need at least 5. And the minority party kept pushing for more than 4. And there was a big plan that failed. And then about 3 weeks later came a 5% deal that included other revenue measures that weren't quite as regressive as the previous package. And then that's what we voted on that gave the teachers their pay raise. So, yeah, there is still push to make that go from now 5 back to 7%. And there will be a state question, I believe, in November, if they can get the signatures, that would take the current 5% GPT back up to the historic rate of 7%. But that will come down to the vote of the people, and that will also turn out a lot of people to the poll in November.
And just so like I can get some clarity on this, because I don't really understand, because we don't have income tax here, I don't really understand any business taxes here in Texas, but in Oklahoma, would these taxes affect small, like small mom and pop shops, or is this more for big companies, or is there sort of a difference between the two under these bills?
Well, the gross production tax right now only affects oil and gas, but it looks like we're going to vote on a bill tomorrow where we're going to double tax wind industry. And so the way it works, for a little background real quick, in Oklahoma, wind pays an ad valorem in lieu of GPT, and gas pays a GPT in lieu of ad valorem. And so they want to tag on an extra tax on wind that we'll probably be voting on tomorrow, that would be $1 per megawatt for wind. And so that will it trickle down a little bit to affect maybe utility prices, but not very much. It seems to be, that seems to have traction. It's likely it'll probably pass. But no, to answer your question on the corporate taxes, that doesn't affect mom and pop shops. If anything, it hurts them. And I'll make this point as an example. It hurts, the incentive actually hurts vertical well producers. So mom and pop, Oklahoma owned oil companies, and which one I used to work for, a vertical well producer. And the way the tax structure is set up, I'll try to, if you can follow me here, back in 1994, when I told you it went from 7 to 1%, the deal was it would stay at 1% for 36 months, and then it would jump back up to 7. So it would stay at 1% for 3 years. as technology continued to increase and they were able to extract more out of the reservoir, you have your big oil companies who are able to afford the technology to extract more oil. They're in and out before the 3 years, so it never jumps back up to seven, whereas your mom and pop oil and gas producers in Oklahoma who drill vertically could be at the same reservoir for 10 years. And so after those 3 years, they're paying the old rate of 7% after that incentive rate has expired. And so that's why there's a movement of quite a few small oil and gas producers who are wanting it to be 7% across the board, because it takes their operation a lot longer to extract than it does for a big company like BP or Chesapeake.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's just a big, and drilling in general is just always, it's going to be a hot button issue, especially with fracking and things of that nature that are hidden. And I don't know, like, if you want to discuss that at all, but so then do you think that it's so with all these issues that Oklahoma has been confronting as a state, do you see a shift in the people as far as a political party, like people who were once far right coming more to the center? Because I think, you know, you see states like Kansas, where Kansas was, they tried the experiment of getting rid of business taxes and it just completely failed, mm-hmm. right? Like their education was just not funded. And I mean, it was a terrible experiment. I think it's a good way to show like why we need taxes. Do you think that we're starting to see people like voters who like it's becoming more of a mix of voting instead of just this like a binary between the two?
Yeah, I saw it firsthand during the teachers' walkout when they were at the Capitol, and the teachers, the 30,000 teachers who were there, were the most engaged people I've ever seen in my life. By the end of the 2 weeks, they were more informed about policy than most people will ever be. And after they had engaged and become informed, they started seeing just how ridiculous it is to not fund education and to continue the tax loopholes that continue to drain our coffers, kind of like you were mentioning earlier. Like, if, you know, going from 5 to 5.25 means I don't get my $30 tax cut at the end of the year, so be it. Most people would rather take that $30 and have it invested in the core services, as long as it's truthfully and transparently done. People don't want their tax dollars wasted. They want it actually invested into the classroom and for the things that matter. And if you take $30 times the 2.5 million people in Oklahoma who make around that median range income, then that's where you get your most reliable and recurring dollars that you don't have to worry about an influx on the market like oil and gas. You know, if the, you know, wind too, it goes in cycles. It's cyclical. It goes up and down, up and down. But the most reassuring or the most recurring and stable generation of dollars you can get to fund core services are from income taxes, and you can make it to where it doesn't affect the least among us. You know, back in, I think it was 2015, Oklahoma took out the earned income tax credit, which is a tax credit for people who are working minimum wage jobs, but they're working full time, you know, 5-7 days a week, 365 days a year. And at the end of the year, they're just, you know, barely making it. The state and the federal government have EITCs, which gives them back around a $350, $450 tax credit at the end of the year to help those people out. And that can offset the regressive taxes that were a part of the deal that we've passed, like dollar cigarette tax, you know, 3-cent fuel tax. There was another one in there. So the second package we voted on was much less regressive than the first, which was a $1.50 cigarette tax. It was 6-cent fuel. But those are the type of things that you can do to protect the most vulnerable without it hurting their pocketbook too much.
Yeah, and so then with medical marijuana, if that became legal, what's the expected income from that, or the expected revenue?
Yeah, and the way the bill's written right now, it's at 7%. It's going to be taxed at 7%, and I believe that 75% of that would go to education, and the other 25% would go toward funding the commission that regulates it.
Wow. So that's that is potentially a lot of money.
Yeah, but because I wouldn't say the intent of medicinal marijuana is to create a lot of revenue. If you wanted to do that, you should just pass recreational. But maybe that'll come up later on down the road. But I don't know. It's 7% is relatively a lower tax than other states that are selling it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What's like the average?
Colorado's, I think, 30%.
Oh, wow.
However, if you do that, then you create, if you tax it too much, you create a black market. So you have to find that kind of, and 7% may be it, but maybe like a 10 or 11 could be it too. You don't want to tax people too much, because like I said, they're just going to go buy it somewhere else.
Right. And so then, and before we go, because I know you are probably running out of time, what are some things people can do to help Oklahoma or to help you or to help anything that's happening right now?
Well, if people in Oklahoma are listening and you want to change, if you feel like your voice isn't being represented at the Capitol, check to see if someone, a candidate, is running in your district. Get involved with their campaign. Volunteer, go door to door, have these conversations that you've been having with friends and family. Have them with strangers in your community. Go meet your neighbors. Become more engaged. Really do your best to share true information and information, which I know can be very, very hard these days. But continue being a learner and learn as much as you can. Stay engaged. And remember that your elected officials work for you. It's not the other way around. You should be able to have a meeting with them. You should be able to communicate with them. Sometimes it does take a while to get back through all the emails and respond to everyone. But if that doesn't work, try calling. The best way you can do, the best way to communicate with your legislator is either on the phone or in person. If you can't do that, then try the emails and the letters. But if you call and you get their assistant, you can actually make a date or a time scheduled for them to call you, and that would be the best way to have their ear and to let them know what's important to you. Just continue to stay engaged. Don't forget to vote. You have the power. I promise you, your vote matters, especially at the state and local level. I guarantee you many of these elections across the state will come down to, some of them, 10 or 20 votes. Out of thousands, out of 10,000 people, it could come down to just 10 or 20 votes. It happened in 2016. There were some votes that had to be recounted, and it came to just a matter of 5. So you cannot understate how important it is to get out and vote and to get others out to vote with you.
Yeah, and I'll include in the blog that I write links for people to go. Like, if you don't know how to find people running in your district, a link that you can click on to look up your district or wherever you live in Oklahoma. Because I know a lot of people don't think that votes matter or things like that. But you're right. Like, on the state and local level, that's where they matter the most.
Yeah, and I would say that when you are talking to people, even if you're in Texas, Oklahoma, or wherever you're listening to, try to steer the conversation back to your state, back to your local level, because things are so messy and confusing and just mixed up at the federal level. That's a whole different beast. But I found out back when you and I were lifting weights, that the state and local level really affects our lives more so than oftentimes the federal level. So really want to make things better for you and your family and your kids and your grandkids, get involved at the state level. Make sure you know your elected officials. If they tell you they're voting one way, actually look up their votes. Don't just take their word on it. Hold your elected officials accountable, and remember they work for you.
Cool. And is there anything else we should be looking out for? Any places people can donate, or is it just strictly voting? Go out, vote. And
well, campaigns do cost money. That candidate that you support, remember that when they buy yard signs or postcard stamps, postcards, walk cards, mailers, all of that stuff costs money. And every candidate I talk to, I encourage them to invest their dollars back into their constituents to get their message out. So, what I did when I was campaigning is every person I spoke to, I would later that night write them a thank you note and something like, I hope to earn your vote in November. And I'd put a 34-cent postcard stamp on there. Well, you know, I talked to thousands of people and those little 34-cent postcard stamps add up. So consider donating 10, even maybe $15 to someone you like. That can go a long ways more so than you would think.
That's awesome. And where can people find you if they want to follow everything you're doing?
You can find me at Representative Mickey Dolenz on Facebook. On Twitter, I'm just Mickey Dolenz. And then on Instagram, just Mickey Dolenz. That's MickeyDolenz.
Right. And we couldn't get into a ton because I know you have to run. But this man has he's done a lot. And I'm going to explain it. You founded a business, right? You started a business at one point. Worked as a teacher, wrote a book. You were an alternate on the Olympic team, correct, for bobsledding?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a beast, man.
Well, thank you, Raphael, man. We always had some good competitions back in the Alpha Project. And
we sure did.
Shout out to Rob.
Yeah, no kidding.
The guy had a lot of patience with us.
He did. No, he's killing it too, man. He's crushing it. So it's good for him. And it looks like you're doing well, man. But thank you for giving me some time today. And I'm just I hope that this podcast can help, and I hope that it can help get sort of all these facts and all this information out to people, especially during this time where it's crucial that people are learning about what's going on.
Yep. All right. So. Well, thank you, Raphael. Anytime, man. We'll have to do it again.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one, okay?
Okay. You too.
All right, bro. Bye.